live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios.
Right wing three, Brunson off the dribble. He got it and one. 4-point play opportunity for Brunson, and the Knicks have an 81-64 lead.
This is the Press Box.
Left corner, Ananobi catching two, three, connects over Jairus Walker, and the Knicks have a 20-point lead.
With Graney and Bischoff.
There will be a game six in Indiana, and a statement victory tonight on their home court. They beat the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals at Madison Square Garden for the first time of the series with a 17-point victory. Final score, 111-94.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. It's Ed, Danny, Jess running the show. Happy Friday to all of you. Bischoff's still on vacation. We think we know where he is. He's somewhere in the middle of the country enjoying family time. So that's good for him, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you're about to go into middle of the country for a little time.
For a little family time, for a nice wedding.
Do you get more nervous as the days go on?
Yes, and I heard you yesterday, and you were right. The nervousness will come from the rehearsal dinner speech.
Oh, yeah. I think you're going to be fine, and then
you
the
think
moment...
So? Like, there might be some emotion.
So this is how I see it play out. You're going to get on the flight with your wife. You guys are going to land in, where are you going? Dallas, right? You guys are going to land in Dallas. Everything's going to be fine. And then once you start seeing the people trickle in, then that's when the nerves are going to set in.
Yeah.
And then you have your dinner. You give your speech. You're going to shed some tears. And then you're like... You're like, Bonnie, I don't know if we could do this.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. The first one going down the aisle. It's going to be hard.
I'm going to, later on in the show, we're going to do my version of Candy Shoney's.
Okay.
However, I'm not going to give you numbers to guess. I'm going to.
Why don't you just give me numbers and tell me what they are?
Well, I'm going to set over unders on different things that may or may not happen with the wedding that involve you. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. That'll be fun. Look,
is it
I don't know
open
what to expect.
Bar?
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. Yes, it is.
Does your son have some partying friends?
Yes. It's a big wedding party.
Oh, okay.
A lot of groomsmen, a lot of bridesmaids. So, you know, young kids. Not 18 or anything. They're in their mid-20s.
Right.
But
they could put some back?
I know a couple of those kids from college, and it might get a little crazy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, a lot of people coming.
How many's in the wedding party? Because I don't know how much of Choney's you heard yesterday, but we were going through a couple numbers about weddings in general and the average numbers of things. And Adam said that the average number of the bridal party is 8.
Wow. This is 8. Well, no, total or 8?
Total.
I think there might be 8 on each side.
Oh my.
This is
are you serious?
Maybe 6. Maybe 6 on each side. This is a big wedding
That's
party.
That's so many people.
I know. Believe me. And it's over the top. We had nothing to do with this. We're just the parents in Las Vegas listening to stories.
You got to put your foot down, Ed. It's too many people.
My foot doesn't exist. My foot doesn't exist right now. I don't put my foot down on much of anything because, you know, Greenspan's at home putting her foot down and telling what's happening. So we're going to see what happens. But, yeah, it's a large gathering. What was the average number of attendees?
What was it? I think it was...
150?
No, I think it was 135, something like that.
I believe. I don't want to... Go on record here.
You're over that.
I think I'm over that.
Oh, my goodness.
is a huge Dallas wedding.
That's one thing that, like, me and my fiance, we've like, briefly talked about how many people that might be invited.
Invited.
And, like, my family's big. My mom is one of 8 kids. And of the 8, I think 5 of them have kids, and 4 of those have multiple kids. But, like, even with friends and everything, I don't think we're touching 100.
Like I said, we have been here the entire time. Obviously, we live here.
Right.
The whole 99% of it has been planned by her parents because they're in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
They're taking, you know, it's the bride's
family.
Did
they make the guest list?
The bride's family. Well, they have the majority of the list because we have friends mostly from when we lived in California.
Right.
Who will fly in. And all our family will fly in from different parts of the country.
Right.
So our numbers are a lot lower.
I think.
Because you're asking people to fly in. And
yeah.
That's different than, hey, you live in Austin or you live in Waco, drive
right,
in for
just
it.
Take a couple hour drive.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think people are more likely to attend a wedding than probably anything else, right? They're more likely to fly in for a wedding than probably any other event.
Yeah, probably.
Like when we have the baby shower in a couple months, we're probably going to have more people at that than we're going to have our wedding. And like none of my family is coming to that.
To the shower?
Yeah.
Jess, you know there's an impending arrival, right?
I did not really know. I heard something.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Danny.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, September. So
very excited. Football
very
season.
Soon.
Yes. By the way, football season.
Yeah. Yes. Football baby.
She is scheduled to be here the Saturday of week 2.
Oh man.
So I'm hoping for like a 9 a.m. birth. That way it's all over and I can relax for college football and then
yeah,
we're home
right.
For
listen,
NFL.
let me give you a little advice like, here, my yeah. friend. If you think that baby's coming on right on time for your kickoff.
Oh, I know.
And then that you're sitting around that day watching football, good luck to you.
Yeah.
That's not happening. I'm here to tell you that right now.
I hope she comes like on the weekend and it's not something where it's like we're doing a show that Friday and I get a phone call.
You get the text.
Ed, Tyler, you guys are on your own. Figure it out.
You get the text. Well, hopefully Bischoff knows how to run the board because if I went over there right now, I wouldn't even know how to turn on these microphones.
We'll just keep them on the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. So good for Danny. We congratulate him. He had bad timing. But
bad timing or good timing? Depends on how you look at it.
Well, either way, it's the football season. It's like getting married. It's like when Cassie Soto got married. It's like there were rules like you can't get married at this time of the year because it's football season. I forget. I forget she might have been married during football season. That was the thing.
Yeah, it was.
We'll have to ask her.
She got married, I think, in like October.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because it was the weekend that the Raiders played the Bears.
The Bears. You're right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then they lost to
who's that quarterback?
Is it Badgett?
Yes.
Is that his name?
Tyson Badgett.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good. So congratulations to Danny. It'll be in September, and hopefully the text doesn't go off on a Friday because there's no chance this show continues. Here we go.
The First Bite.
Well, 111-94. The Knicks were able to do it. Continue the series in game 5. Brunson 32-5-5, Cat 24-12-3, despite the bruised left knee. Halliburton, we're going to talk about Halliburton in a second, only 8-6, and Siakam 15-6-5, so the only starter, Siakam over 10 points. I don't think I was surprised that they went back home and won. I thought that was everyone's kind of, I don't know, strong assumption, but the assumption that they would go home and win.
Yeah, I think that was kind of like their last hurrah, I guess you could say.
Okay.
It's like they were like, all right, we're down 3-1. Let's not try to get embarrassed on our home court and have the series end in New York. And, I mean, if you just look at this box score, it's almost like Indiana didn't really try. Siakam is the only starter, and he's one of three players, the other being Obi Toppin and Benedict Mathurin, who attempted more than 10 shots.
Which for them is amazing, given the
Absolutely.
Ball movement and how many times they shoot.
Like, so the entire starting five for the Pacers went 13 of 39. Karl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson by themselves went 22 of 38.
Well, when you hold them under 100, you're doing well.
Yes.
When you hold them under 100, you're doing well. They won for the first time on their own floor in the series, prevented the Pacers from earning their second NBA Finals trip in franchise history. Indiana's going to try again Saturday at home. I think that might be a different story. One thing that's happening, because Tom Thibodeau, you know, has been, I don't know, criticized the word questioned for his lack of using the bench, mm-hmm. right? You know, he uses 6-7 players. He's done all year. People kind of give him a hard time, runs him down. He's changed in this series.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. Miles McBride played 18 minutes. DeLon Wright played 10. Landry Shamet had his most impactful game of the series with 14 minutes of action. If you said DeLon Wright got double digits in minutes in the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think anyone would believe it. Do you think this was Thibodeau succumbing to the pressure, or do you think he actually thought about it and said, I've got to rest some of these guys some of the time and get their legs strong? You know, Cat's got the injury. Brunson's had foul trouble. Is he worn down? How do you think this played out? I mean, was this Thibodeau saying, you know, maybe everyone else has been right the whole time, or is this him just saying, I need something different in game five to, you know, extend the series?
I think it's, I don't know. I think he was trying to put more people in off the bench because there were 6 bench players who played, but 3 of those players combined for 17 minutes. So it's not like the bench is playing a ton. However, Josh Hart was a starter, got moved to the bench for Mitchell Robinson. He played 34 minutes last night.
So still.
So there is, he is still using his main guys quite a bit because 5 players played more than 30 minutes, being Josh Hart and 4 of the 5 starters outside of Mitchell Robinson. So he is still mainly going with a 6-7-man rotation, but he's using multiple players off the bench and kind of evening it out so it doesn't look as top-heavy as it did. But I still think he is still in that mindset of we can only really play 8 people, and that's
right. 2 nights after giving up 43 in the first quarter, the Knicks held the Pacers to 45 in the half. So we've talked about it. We talked about it with Adam Candy. We talked about it with guests this week. We'll get JVT on here at 8:30 to get his thoughts about Tyrese Haliburton, who had 32, 15, and 12 on Tuesday, held to just 8-6, about the superstar status comparative to the star status.
Mm-hmm.
One game, very small sample size. I don't want to go, you know, race what he's done one game, but it is game 5. And like you said, in terms of how much these guys actually took shots, to go 8-6 in that big of a game is not your superstar status.
Right. And I had this conversation with John a couple weeks ago when he and I did the show. And I asked him, do you, like, because it was right after the player votes came out when Haliburton was named most overrated
player.
And he mentioned that he doesn't necessarily think Haliburton is overrated, but he also, at least from what I remember, I don't think John is in the mindset that Haliburton is a superstar.
Right.
He's just a good player. He hasn't reached that level yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he ever will.
I don't know either. I mean, they, you know, the way they play, the way they move the ball, a lot of people on a different night could get numbers.
Right.
He's not SGA in terms of, you know, who the guy is and mm-hmm. at all times. You know, because obviously Siakam and others, you know, can step up and have huge games, which they do on a regular basis. So maybe that's going to play into it a little in terms of how high his star grows in the league, meaning Haliburton. But I just, you know, last night wasn't good. And not all on him, because like you said, you had the numbers to start the show. Not good on anybody. I mean, they just didn't play well. 45 in the first half. Like I said, if you hold that team under 100, you're doing really, really well. And let's credit the Knicks. Let's credit the Knicks defensively. Indiana only shot 40.5% from the field. It's by far its lowest scoring game of the postseason. Brunson had 14 in the first quarter. The Knicks led 27-23, giving up 20 fewer points in the first quarter than game 4 when they trailed 43-35. Towns, who was questionable to play after hurting his left knee in a collision late in game 4, picked up the slack with 12 in the second when Brunson was scoreless. So Brunson in the first, Towns in the second, their 2 stars stepped up.
And that seems to be how it has been, where Karl Anthony Towns has been starting these games very slow and then second half picks it up. We saw it in game 4 where game 3 where he scored 20 points in the second half.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, in the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
And he finished with 24, so if he didn't have that explosive fourth quarter, he was irrelevant. And we even went through the play-by-play Tuesday during commercial break, and Carl Anthony Towns did all of his scoring in the first 6 minutes of the quarter.
Right.
And then he didn't score after that. He only attempted one shot in the final 5 minutes. So if he doesn't have those explosive quarters or explosive halves, Carl Anthony Towns has been pretty much irrelevant. And you just can't have that from your second guy on the team.
If it closes out in six, mm-hmm. off the top of your head, from what we've discussed all along, what's going to be the main issue with Indiana against OKC? OKC's depth, its size, its defensive propensity, SGA, all of the above.
I would have to say all of the above. I mean, we would have to see what they can do to stop Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And right. then when they stop him, then they got Williams.
Right.
And he can put up 25 at any night. So they have other scorers. Plus they
have Holmgren.
Yep. And down low they have Hartenstein, who right. plays very physical, very big. So it'll be interesting to see how they match up. We had Ben Sidery on the other day. He thinks Pacers in seven.
Yeah, he did. He did pick the Pacers. I do think the Pacers have a better shot than the Knicks, and I'm sure Adam Candy and others will not be happy with that assumption. But I think that the way the Pacers score or have the ability to score and move the ball, it will be, to me, that's the most fascinating matchup because of the offensive defensive differences mm-hmm. in terms of defensively by OKC, what they could do to that Indiana offense. I mean, look what the Knicks did last night.
Right.
You step up and do that on a consistent basis, that thing could be over easily.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see about that. Off and running here on a Friday, it's Ed, Danny, Jess running the show. When we come back, guess what? It's the same Stanley Cup Finals as last year.
Blocked by Ekholm. That'll lead to a breakaway for Connor McDavid. He's in and he scores! Connor McDavid drags it back to his forehand. And Edmonton has regained a two-goal lead in Game 5.
You're listening to the Press Box on 100.9 FM and 1100 AM.
6-3 over the Stars last night. Oilers defeat Dallas to win the series. They got their reverse sweep, lost game 1, 6-3, won games 2 through 5. It is a rematch of the 2024 Stanley Cup Finals with Florida. Florida won games 1 through 3, Edmonton won games 4 through 6, and Florida won it all in game 7. Connor McDavid last night, you heard it there, had a breakaway goal and an assist. 40-year-old Corey Perry scored again, and Edmonton is going to their second straight cup final. So
Dallas not have a good series.
No, they didn't. And they won 6-3 to open it up, and you thought, hey, maybe this is the time they're going to revenge from last year when they lost to Edmonton in the Western Conference Finals then. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's three straight Western Conference Finals that Dallas can't get out of. So they have some issues, but they're really good. They just couldn't. Edmonton did an amazing job when they got that second period, third period lead to just shut things down.
Yeah.
They didn't even, I mean, they had some offensive zone time, but it's like they didn't even try to score. They just said, we're just going to shut it down, and you're not going to score. And Dallas did a poor job of trying to create offense and get in there and equalize it. They got it to 3-3. Then it was 4-3 about a minute later, and then that was it. Went to 5-3, and then the empty netter went to 6-3 against the Stars. So we get another Edmonton-Florida matchup. I think they are the two best teams. At least they've mm-hmm. proven to be the two best teams in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
And we'll see. I mean, I kind of want Florida because I like Nate Schmidt so much because he's so cool to the media when he was here. I always base things on if you're cool to the media. And Nate Schmidt was like one of the coolest guys ever to the media from VGK when he was here. So it's cool that he's in the Stanley Cup final. But I wouldn't be upset if McDavid won it. And let me ask you this, because I heard this going out last night on the broadcast as they were leaving the broadcast. Obviously the best player in the world right now, obviously one of the greatest players ever, obviously Hall of Famer, like Heasley, you know, he's an incredible player.
Who, Leon Draisaitl?
Connor McDavid.
Oh.
Connor McDavid, all right. Does Connor McDavid need this to cement his legacy? Like, where do you stand on You have to win a championship, because we know a lot of guys in the NBA who were, you know, top 20, top 50 players in the history of the NBA who never won it. Does he need it to cement his legacy? Or people just realize he's the best player in the world for several years now and is what it is?
See, the Cup will do exactly that. It'll cement it. But I think that legacy is already there. Like, it's very similar to Ovechkin, where everyone knew he was an amazing player. He was top of the NHL for years, leading goal scorer for years. And when he won the Cup, it was just like, okay, now, like, there is absolutely no argument against him.
Right.
Which there wasn't really anyways, but there's always that, but he never won it. And then he won it, and now that conversation's over, and now there's nothing you can bring up.
Right.
So it's that same way with McDavid, where there's not really an argument, but somebody's always going to say, he never won.
Right.
Then, so if he wins, it's, okay, well, yeah, he won, so there's nothing he can do. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Guaranteed. 100%.
I think he's there now, but you're right. They can't say anything. The one thing they can say right now is he's never won it.
Right, and I don't think championships make or break Hall of Fame, because you can be a fantastic player and just not have the pieces around you, and you can never get over the hump.
Right.
I mean, how many NFL players do we know of who had great careers?
Hall of Famers.
And they never won a championship. I mean, look at Philip Rivers. He had a terrific career. He had a few really good seasons in San Diego.
He's got 26 kids.
Exactly. He could field two full teams.
Two field teams.
But he never could get over the hump.
Yeah.
And does that make or break a Hall of Fame? I don't think so, because on the flip side, look at Eli Manning. He won two Super Bowls, was an average quarterback in the NFL, and he didn't even come close to the Hall of Fame this year in his first year.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's a great point by you. I thought the two wins were getting him in. Usually,
two
Super Bowl wins will get you in. It doesn't matter how, quote unquote, average you were. If you win two Super Bowls, you're usually in that, which I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if he eventually gets in.
Yeah, but I think it'll be a few years.
But it might be a few years before they let him in and they vote him in. But two Super Bowl championships, you're usually in automatically.
I thought the rings and the name were going to get him in automatically.
Right. Quickly, what about Pete DeBoer pulling Jake Oettinger? They had two shots, two goals. He pulled them. Afterwards, he said he's lost 6 of 7 to Edmonton in the last few years. He needed something to fire the team up.
I don't know.
He's your guy, and I like Pete as much as anyone, but I think I would have rolled with him.
At this point in the season, I mean, I know you kind of got to do anything and everything that you can because you are at the breaking point of the season, but to pull him after 7 minutes and giving up two goals, you kind of got to at least play it out through the first
period. I think you got to play it out with him.
At least through the first period. Now, if he gives up 4 in the first period, pull him. But you don't pull him after 2. And then, what was it, a minute and a half after he got pulled, Casey DeSmith gave up a goal?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it didn't really do a whole lot.
Right. No, I know. I just, when he did it, I said, oh, no, Pete, don't do that. Don't bring him off.
And Pete's gonna be exactly what we were just talking about. Phenomenal coach. Can't get over the hump.
Right. And it's too bad. Want Pete to win it.
Yeah.
Want Pete to get one.
I don't think he will.
Really? They're pretty good.
But the we've seen it year after year where they're a really good team and they just can't do it when it comes to the Western Conference Finals. And how long is this Oilers team going to be around? Because if they can stay together at least 80%, 85%, they could be here every year.
Don't forget about the Knights, my friend.
Well, yeah, obviously Knights too.
Don't forget
about
the Golden Knights.
I mean, they got a lot of contract things coming up, right. So who knows how they're going to be looking in 2 years.
Right. They have some age on their team.
Yeah, exactly.
They have some age on their team. So we don't know where their window is. I don't think it's closed, but you might want to get it done again before that thing
closes.
Is it
crazy to say that their window, unless they can somehow get 50-50 split, young guys and old guys, is their window closed in 3 years?
Oh, three's a long time. It might be. Three's a long time. If they can get another one in three, I mean, good for them, and then you've really done it, and then let the window close for a while if you get another one.
Maybe not even get one, just to be in the running for one, and then it's closed and you might have to rebuild.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they ever rebuild. They just go out and get guys.
Only do that for so long until you reach maximum capacity, and then it's like, all right, well, we got to ship this $15 million guy off so that we can get four $3 million guys.
All right, off and running here on a Friday, 7:32 is the time, and next up is Ben Brown.
He puts things together. I think they're called packages. Ah, it's a parlay. ESPN Bet's Ben Brown joins the press box.
Hi, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Friday. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. It's Ed and Danny with you today. So, wanted to start off, maybe it's a sore spot, but where do the Timberwolves go from here? You saw them in terms of the playoffs, and they tried to make a run again, and you're watching as closely as anybody. I was interested in seeing where you thought they go from here. What do they need to kind of get over the hump?
It is, obviously a really good question. I think obviously Ant continuing. Oh man, it was a Freudian slip right there. I think Anthony Edwards in a lot of ways, like, continuing to evolve. Obviously, I think, you know, especially the last two games of the series, maybe weren't exactly what they needed from him in order to get past, like, what is going to be widely considered, like, the best team, you know, in the NBA, what, you know, will be, like, the odds-on favorite to win the NBA championship if those series odds come out. Like, to me, the evolution of him from going from, you know, a young player with a ton of promise who does definitely have flashes to, you know, quote unquote, be the MVP of the NBA is in a lot of ways what it's going to take out there for them to kind of get over the hump. And I do think, you know, outside of that and potentially his evolution from a scoring standpoint, they kind of need to keep the rest of the guys intact. I do think, you know, people like Terrence Shannon Jr., who did play relatively fiercely down the stretch, hit a lot of big shots. Like, they do need those sorts of people to continue to grow into a more significant role, I would say, sooner rather than later as well. Because I think, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, that's going to be, the question for what they do with guys like Nikhil Alexander, Dante DiVincenzo. Like, those are kind of the one question marks as they head into the next season. And I think kind of like that outside perimeter shooting to support Anthony Edwards is going to be the spot that they do need to probably be not only more consistent, but have younger players kind of step up and evolve into those sorts of spots. So I think a guy like Terrence Shannon Jr. does make a lot of sense to kind of like grow in his minutes. And I think kind of alleviate the pressure and then of what Ant actually experienced. And I think from there, you know, they kind of got to keep this core in place and see what they have next season. But I think without Ant, you know, taking that next step, they're always going to potentially be on this doorstep or just be, you know, a few teams away where they really want to end up being at the end of the season for sure.
Just to continue on that with Anthony Edwards, we saw in game four, he had just two shot attempts in the first half, and I believe he had 4 points at halftime. And that's as the leader of the team and a top 10, top 7 player in the league. That's just something that you can't really do, especially when you're trying to climb back in. Where do you think Anthony Edwards views this team right now? This is the second year in a row where they lost the Western Conference Finals 4-1 and didn't really look all that competitive in the majority of the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways he's probably still, you know, at the point, given, you know, especially what he, you know, said post, you know, press conference, basically that, you know, he's still enjoying the ride. He's excited that he got to this point this early on. But, you know, this team, does need to get better. And I think he obviously probably hopefully understands that he's kind of the one that needs to get better as well. And I do think, you know, kind of going back to like the two shots in the first half in game four, like there is, you know, a pretty dramatic mental element to all of this, right? And I do think, you know, we heard, you know, Tyrese Haliburton talk about it, you know, with his discussion, him going to, like, you know, people like Sue Bird and kind of trying to understand, like, when does he need to be a facilitator and when does he actually need to be a closer? And I think those are, you know, going to always be struggles for young players. And I think Edwards may be potentially changing his philosophy to the point where, especially in these games, in the postseason, in must-win spots, like, he needs to go out and take charge right away. He can't be the one that's trying to distribute and get his players involved. Like, he needs to go and get easy buckets and force the defense to completely try to eliminate him. And when they actually do that, that's when other guys kind of need to step up and actually take some shots. And I do think, obviously, you know, the OKC defense picking him up at half court, trying to get him to, you know, completely deny him the ball was effective. But if you're going to be, you know, a top five player in the NBA and the leading scorer on your team, like, you need to find ways in order to get the job done no matter what the defense is throwing at you. And I think that evolution of his game, both from a mental standpoint and just taking over when he absolutely has to, I think those are the spots where he does definitely need to take a leap. And it seems willing. He seems willing to actually be able to kind of put in that work. And I do think that at least from that area, hopefully things are improved, and when they do get to that sort of, you know, spot where they're at in the season, Western Conference Finals, you know, next year, I think him progressing in that particular area is going to be the one thing that really actually does get them over the hump and does make these series a lot closer than what they, you know, have been in the past two seasons for sure.
So then on the flip side of that, looking at OKC and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they are in the NBA Finals. Do you think they're just going to run away with it no matter who they play, or do you think that whoever comes out of the East can make it a series, maybe six games, potentially seven, if they can steal one or two games in Minnesota?
Yeah, I think I'm of the belief that, you know, I do think the Thunder are kind of clearly the best team, you know, in the NBA right now. I'm obviously, I would say that, not an NBA expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I think the way in which they're playing right now has been just so much better than what we've seen. And especially when guys like, you know, Jalen Williams are playing significantly well, hitting their shot. Obviously, they have, you know, him. They have Chet Holmgren, who, you know, in a lot of ways continues to contribute, but also has been, like, really efficient from a three-point standpoint. Obviously, giving you a lot from a rebounding standpoint as well. Like, they do have this starting five that has been evolved to the point where I do think this is the strongest starting five in basketball. Then, you know, with Alex Caruso playing significant minutes and kind of contributing from a defensive perimeter guard standpoint, like, they do look like, you know, by far the deepest team. I do think it would take them, you know, maybe not playing up to the expectation of where they were at in this series in order for the actual, you know, NBA Finals to go six or seven games. But I think outside of maybe like a hero type performance from Tyrese Haliburton or Jalen Brunson, you know, all the discussion that we previously had with Ant, where maybe the Timberwolves didn't necessarily get that sort of game from their star player. You know, outside of, you know, one of Brunson or Haliburton kind of living up to that expectation and kind of stealing one or two games, I do think it's probably going to be, you know, a gentleman's sweep, game five, 4-1 sort of thing for the OKC Thunder when it's all said and done.
To heck with the NBA. What about the Lynx?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, they're playing, you know, it's been a fun start to the season. I think, you know, obviously the Lynx, you know, haven't lost it. I think, you know, the Liberty and the Lynx kind of do look, you know, in a lot of ways, like the class of the WNBA right now. I have to shout out Danny as well. You know, before the season even started, he asked, you know, just how bad were the Sun going to be. And I think even though we both agreed they were going to be bad, I don't know if we necessarily thought they were going to be, you know, a 16-point, you know, score differential team as bad as they are. No wins, you know, haven't really been overly relevant in any games whatsoever. So I think it's interesting. I've been, you know, relatively impressed with the Mercury, you know, as well. And I think in a lot of ways, obviously, if we see, you know, the Aces and, you know, the Fever, you know, when they get Caitlin Clark back, kind of start to figure it out, we should see, you know, the top four maybe a little bit closer to expectation. But I think, you know, particularly the Mercury and Dream, and even to a lesser extent, the Storm and Mystics have all played better than expectation. I think it's making for some really competitive early basketball. And I do think, you know, if the Aces and Thibodeau kind of figure things out sooner rather than later, you know, this could be a situation similar to how the Lynx got, you know, played so well to start last season. And it's really tough to kind of catch some of those teams. And if you are looking at, you know, a fifth or a sixth seed for a team like the Aces or Fever, like that's a pretty difficult first round matchup, and then, you know, a really difficult second round matchup as well in WNBA playoffs. So I think there's definitely going to be some jockeying for positions. But I think overall, you know, it has been relatively entertaining basketball to start, and I think that's only going to continue on here through the next couple months for sure.
Will you, when you start deciding what to bet or what to how to break things down, do you follow OTAs? Do you pay any attention to what's happening now around the league in terms of players or spots that guys are going for? Or is this just way too early in May to even worry about it?
I think, you know, at least from like a betting standpoint, I think it's a little tough to decipher because obviously, you know, with closed practices and everything else, you're really only going to see, you know, what the teams actually want you to see from a practice standpoint as well. And I think that makes it kind of difficult to at least read between the lines, maybe separate the noise from like what's actually occurring in there. So I think from that standpoint, it is difficult. But I do think, you know, once we kind of look and get more numbers on like season-long player props and stuff like that, I do think from a usage standpoint, obviously you have to understand, you know, with OTAs, and it being, you know, a quote-unquote optional thing for players, you do have to understand who's obviously in the building and who's not. But I think for me, the spots that I would maybe emphasize more from a betting standpoint is, you know, what are the teams where it does seem like everyone's bought in and it seems like everyone's showing up and it seems like they have their star players who are there and they're trying to develop the younger players, and where is their, you know, complete buy-in from, you know, guy 1 through 53 on the roster. And although that's kind of a difficult thing to quantify, I do think you can understand, you know, with who's in the building, you know, kind of directionally where this team is at least trying to head and where, you know, where players have kind of bought in. And I do think you can at least kind of understand and gauge that, you know, relatively well through OTAs. So I think it's more so, you know, who's involved, who's doing what, who's actually in the building more so than, you know, JJ McCarthy with, you know, 13 of 17 and 7-on-7 passing drills with a 78% completion percentage or something like that. Until we get actual PFF charting data on all the reps, I think it's tough to quantify, you know, on a per play basis, just how players are actually performing. There's still an expectation of who's showing up and how much buy-in I think there actually is in the direction of where the team's going for sure.
So real quick, Ben, I wanted to real quick touch on UFL. We've already got our conference championship games. We know we're going to be playing next weekend. However, there's still regular season games this weekend. Do you got your eyes on any of these games, or are you just waiting out this week? As I'm thinking it's probably going to be a rest week for the four teams that are playing next week in the championship games.
Yeah, it is tough. I do think this is a spot where, you know, in-game is obviously going to make more sense. You can watch the first couple plays or first couple series basically and kind of understand who's actually playing. But I do think like a team like Michigan would be a spot I'd normally buy into, but I just don't know what they're going to be doing, you know, Saturday afternoon here. So it is definitely locked in as far as who's playing next week. And I do think, you know, some of the spreads, particularly, you know, Battlehawks and Panthers, you know, look short for that reason, but I think there's probably justification for them potentially resting some of their starters. So I think if you are playing things, you know, first half makes a lot more sense than full game. But yeah, for me, it's definitely kind of a wait and see approach, and more so, you know, I want to see how the first couple of series are being played out, who's actually in the game before really, you know, wagering any sort of money on what's happening this week for sure.
Well, he has Ben Brown from ESPN Bets, joins us here each Friday with awesome stuff. Go Lynx, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ben. Have a great show.
Take care of yourself, Ben Brown.
Ooh, you might have angered some Aces fans with
that.
Go
Lynx. That's a shame. 5-0. I'll take the winner. Front runner in the WNBA. Come on. We'll get into the Aces later. Back after this.
I think they all are. I mean, I think Dak is in the developmental phase, and that sounds crazy for a guy that's played that much, but, like, there's things that we're tweaking with Dak, you know, so I don't think it's just for Joe. Joe is a guy that we obviously know all about the talent, but, you know, the system that he came from in Tennessee, you know, created some challenges in terms of just what he has to learn and things like that. But the minute these quarterbacks think that they've figured it all out, that's when it's probably time for them to think about doing something different, because the way defenses attack in this league, it makes it almost impossible to ever relax.
You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff.
Patrick Mahomes needs to change how he plays.
Really? Who said that?
According to Brian Schottenheimer, if you think you got it figured out, you need to change how you play.
Our guy, Brian.
Dak Prescott is going into his 10th year in the league.
Which, by the way, just you saying that is amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. I remember like it was yesterday where I was when him and Zeke Elliott got drafted.
Got drafted, yeah.
I remember exactly where I was. And for him to be going into his 10th year, and now Schottenheimer's like, yeah, Joe Milton's in developmental stage because he's second year in the league, but also Dak Prescott is too.
Yeah, I know. It's Brian. Like, he's our guy.
I know there's some tweaks he can do. I know there's maybe something he can work on, but to call him in the developmental stage, it's pretty wild.
Brian setting us up for 6 wins?
That's what it appears. How bad is this going to be under him?
It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good.
Like, he was the OC last year, but he didn't call plays. I'm assuming he's going to be calling plays this year. Maybe
I would assume.
Not. I don't know.
I don't know, but I'd assume first year he wants to be in control. He wants to have, you know, an overseer of the offense, and I would think he'd call plays. I would think he'd call plays.
The Cowboys' offensive coordinator is Clayton Adams.
Big CA?
He was the offensive line coach for the Cardinals.
Oof. All right, Schottenheimer's calling plays.
So it's just weird to me that offensive coordinators don't call plays.
Yeah. I think Schottenheimer's going to call them. I'm not look, we're both Cowboy fans. What's the number, 7.5?
Last I saw, it was 7.5, and it was around like 135 to the over. I mean, they have a tough schedule. They gave them a pretty tough schedule.
No, they do.
There's like a 6 or 7 week stretch where they're playing teams that all had 11 or more wins last year.
I know they got to play them twice, but why did they have to open up at Philly? Why did they have to be the team on Thursday night?
I'm fine with that. What I'm not
fine with.
I want
to get off to a good start.
What I'm not fine with is that our Thanksgiving and our Christmas days are going to be potentially ruined by Cowboys games.
Oh, by losses.
Got to play the Chiefs on Thanksgiving, and then I think the Commanders on Christmas.
Ugh. Not good. Come on, Brian. Let's get it done.